Radio Pulpit, 657 AM.
Your daily companion indeed. We get straight into our chat with Nandi Tselanyane. Nandi, good afternoon. Thank you so much for joining us. Nandi? Hi, Nandi.
Hi, Bo. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. Sorry about that. We've just been experiencing troubles with our lines, but I think that's fine. Are you good?
I'm well, thank you. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you, Nandi. Very, very well. We'll get straight into our chat. We've got Nandi Tselanyane helping us in our legal matters. And today we're talking restraints of trade. Maybe let's start by defining what a restraint of trade is and why one needs to familiarize themselves with it.
Sure, yes. So for a restraint of trade, is essentially an agreement between an employer and an employee, and sometimes, you know, among shareholders. And really the purpose of a restraint of trade is to protect the interest of the restrainer. So the person, in this case, the employer, would say to the employee, I want to restrain certain information or trade secrets or customer information or connections that it were, so that you do not share these information with other people should you decide to leave the employee, right? So it's usually in a, it's a provision or a standalone agreement as part of your employment contract, whereby it's included in your employment contract initially, and it's really just there to restrain you from trading with the information that is derived from this employment contract going forward.
I see. And what does the court consider? Should a person want out, you know, of such an agreement?
Sure. So essentially, so the understanding is that, you know, all individuals in South Africa, individuals are free to sell their skills and to practice their trade in the market to make a living. So that is really a given. And that is honestly a fundamental constitutional right that we are all available, that is available to all of us, right? And so the, essentially what the court considers in these restraints, it's often raised by the employee who feels that this restraint is unreasonable. Maybe the restraint, the duration of the restraint is too long. So usually the employee will be the one that brings it to court to say, the court, can you please consider whether this restraint of trade is fair and whether it is reasonable. So the court will go through certain considerations. So just from the top of our heads, number four, there's about four of them that the court will consider. In firstly, the court will consider, does the employer have a protectable interest? In other words, does it have something worth protecting and you know, and enforcing and ensuring that it's not shared out there? Secondly, the court will consider whether the employee could the employee potentially prejudice the protectable interest, and whether is this restraint reasonable. And then lastly, it will consider whether the restraint is against policy. Now, in a bit of much more detail, when the court considers, does the employer have a protectable interest? Essentially, we're talking about now the trade secret. This is something that is unique to the business, which the business has created to help it compete in the market. So this is something that sets your business from the other businesses apart. So this becomes your trade secret. It could be a recipe if you are in that kind of business. It could be a production method. It could be a design or confidential information relating to your customer list, your price structures, operating procedures, really anything that is unique to your business that sets your business apart within the market. So that is what we call a protectable interest, right? Now, secondly, the court would then consider, could the employee potentially prejudice this protectable interest? What do we mean by that? Does the business does not have to necessarily show an actual harm. In other words, the employer doesn't have to show that, yeah, if Mpo leaves my employee, this is how much I'm going to lose. No, the only thing that the employer has to do is to show that there's a serious potential for harm if this ex-employee is allowed to trade freely in the market without any restraint. So that's all that they have to show. And then on the third consideration on whether or not is the restraint of trade reasonable. Now, this is where a lot of the court cases come and are born from. So here, the court will consider is this restraint the duration. So if the duration is for about 2 years, and then the court would often find that it's a bit unreasonable. You know, they'll consider the geographic area. So mm-hmm. some of the restraints you'll hear are throughout South Africa. So they'll restrain you from presenting a radio show throughout South Africa, throughout all radio stations in South Africa for a duration of 2 years. The court might find that to be a bit unreasonable, right? So those are some of the things that the court will consider. And then, of course, lastly, the court will consider whether it is restraint against public policy. And what it means by that really is, if all of these criteria for the restraint exist and its purpose is to protect the employer's legitimate business interests, it will probably be enforceable. But if it's not, and the real purpose for the employer restraining you is simply to stop the employee from practicing his trade, then the court is more likely to find that this restraint is against public policy and is unreasonable.
Sure. We're joined on the line by Nandita Lanyane, attorney, helping us with legal matters right here on the show. And today we're talking restraints of trade. Now, maybe just examples, Nandi, before we obviously conclude, maybe just sure. examples through real life cases.
Yeah. So there are a couple of cases, you know, case laws that we can use as by way of example just to demonstrate how this restraint of trade was really dealt with by the courts. So the one case of Johnson Workwear versus Williamson, the 2013 case, the court did not enforce a restraint of trade that prevented the employee from being employed or from having any interest in any competing business throughout South Africa for 12 months from termination. And the reason the court did not enforce this restraint was because the employee had acquired his knowledge from the textile industry from his 20 plus years of working in this industry way before he had joined this particular employer. He had gained no special skills from this particular employer. There was nothing confidential or unique about the employer's clothing manufacturing processes, and his new job that he had now acquired did not even involve manufacturing. And a nationwide restraint, therefore, the court found was unreasonable, you know, to restrain this employee for the next 12 months throughout South Africa. So in that case, so that is another case where the court felt that the restraint was just unreasonable and said that the employee was free, or the ex-employee was free to trade as they so wished. The second case that the court has considered in the past is that of Digicorp.
Nandi?
I'm caught?
Yes, we can still hear you.
Hello?
Hi. Yes.
Sorry.
Yes, so, no problem.
So the second case that the court has considered in the past is that of Digicorp Fleet Management. Now, in this case, the High Court did not enforce a restraint which prevented an ex-employee from working for a competitor for 2 years. Now, this is because the employee did not acquire any confidential information while she was employed at the company at Digicorp, and she had left the company with no more knowledge than she had when she first started working for them. You know, so other factors that were considered were that her new work did not involve fleet management work, which Digicorp specializes in, and she had no strong connection with any of their clients, the ex-employer's clients. So in that case, again, the court felt that, you know, there's nothing unique about this business. This person is not going to compete in the exact same market as the ex-employer. So essentially, that restraint of trade was found to be unreasonable. And the last case is that of Nashua versus Wesley Dempster, wherein the employee had signed a non-disclosure agreement with his new employer, in which he undertook not to disclose any confidential Nashua information. This employee did not have any much knowledge about Nashua's business, and he received no benefit in return for signing the restraint undertaking. So the court took to account the fact that the company had not consistently also enforced this restraint of trade in the past. So I think here again, the court is just showing that over and above the restraint of trade, in this case, this employee even signed a non-disclosure agreement. So there was absolutely no reason for the employer to fear or to assume that this employee would divulge or use whatever information he had learned from Nashua. So, yeah, so that's essentially the consider some of the cases that the court have considered in the past involving restraints of trade, and really just showing you how and what the court tend to consider. And so it's not automatic that the restraint of trade would be applied and would be implemented, but the court would have to, you know, strike a balance between the employer's right to protect its unique business interests on the one hand, and then the employee's right to work and sell his or her skills in the competitive market on the other. So therefore, ultimately, an employee who wants to be released from a contract in restraint of trade must be able to persuade the court that his or her right to work outweighs the potential prejudice his ex-employer could potentially suffer if the employee leaves and competes with the ex-employer in the open market. And then only then will the court relieve an employee of the need to keep his or her promise as it were.
Nandi, thank you so much for this. I know you have to go back into your meeting. Thank you. Really, really appreciate it. Maybe just your parting shot and maybe contact details of how we can get a hold of you.
Thank you. Thank you, Boris. So, yeah, just as a parting shot, I think it's always important for employees before they sign the employment contract just to understand these concepts. And one of these concepts is this one, because it's almost prevalent in all cases. Just to understand and look at the duration and actually understand what it means for them and the implication there of should you decide to terminate or to resign from this employer and what it means for you in trading in that particular industry or sector. So that's the one thing that I would highlight. I am available on all social media platforms at Nandi_Zelanyane or on my website at www.zelanyaneinc.co.za.
Lovely. Thank you, Nandi. Enjoy what's left of your, well, there's still a lot of it left.
There's a lot left. Thank you so much.
All right, cool. Thank you, Nandi. It's 10.
Bye-bye.
Lovely. 10 minutes before 2 o'clock. We're heading towards the last hour of the show. On the other side of two, we've got a guest artist, Joseph Malaza. So we are going to be chatting to him right here on the show. I really can't wait. We'll find out a little bit more about him, play his music as well right here on the show. Really, local, beautiful local music that we will be blazing right here on the show. We are going to be talking to him right here on Heart to Heart. Joseph Malaza, a renowned, versatile musician from Mamelodi who has been in the music industry for over a decade. So his music journey started in church and he continued performing on bigger platforms, right? He joined community gospel group called Joy Family. Then he co-founded a music group called Jukebox, the brand, recorded his first solo EP called Worship and Praise. Then later he joined Twani Gospel Choir. You know, sometimes people will only identify with you when you start maybe joining Botswana Gospel Choir. And you've been laying the groundwork for the longest of time, you know. So he's been at this for quite some time. We're going to interact with him right here on the show. Cannot wait.
Radio Pulpit is a family radio station committed to biblical values. For this reason, we have signed a code of conduct with the Broadcasting Complaints Commission of South Africa. Under the code, Radio Pulpit is committed to giving news that is accurate, comments that are fair, and programming that is not offensive, obscene, or harmful. If you feel that Radio Pulpit is not living up to that code, we encourage you to direct your complaint in writing to the Broadcasting Complaints Commission of South Africa, P.O. Box 412-365, Craig Hall 2024, or send a fax to 011-787-0280, or email to bccsa@nabsa.co.za. The Broadcasting Complaints Commission is also obtainable on their website, www.bccsa.co.za. Radio Pulpit, your daily companion. In today's rush world, there is limited time for yourself. Your cell phone, however, is with you all the time. So why not use it? Visit our Radio Pulpit website with your cell phone and restore your soul. There you can find out more about Radio Pulpit, download the Bible to your cell phone, read Word for Today, and you can listen to us online. Just visit www.radiopulpit.co.za, especially developed for your cell phone. Radio Pulpit, your daily companion.
You and 657 AM and Life, a winning team on the road to eternity.